Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. So I think it's unprecedented for me to bid a fond farewell to two public figures in the same day. This is an oral obituary of George Alagaya. So I realized I've actually misspelt his surname in the title as I was preparing it, but I'll go back and correct that later. So, and that touches on something else. People couldn't pronounce his name, which he said is something like pronounced really about Ulagia. And rather than correct people all the time, he just went with Alagaya, which is a version of it that people found easiest to pronounce. So he's been called to his royal age of 67. He was suffering cancer of the liver for about 9 years. So it's a minor miracle the National Health Service managed to keep him alive for so long. Anyway, tributes have poured in through from across the journalistic world. So he was really unique in his generation in being ethnically Sri Lankan, from a Tamil Christian family born in Sri Lanka, but due to turbulence in that country, due to the government being unsympathetic towards the Tamil minority, his father, who was a hydraulic engineer, decided they better move overseas. So they shifted to Ghana, another quondam British colony, where obviously English was the official language. That was no difficulty with language. And his father worked on various projects there for a few years, and they decided that young George would be schooled in the United Kingdom, a country with which he had no ancestral connection. So he did that, and he said there was quite a lot of racialism in the United Kingdom. I was fascinated to read him say that actually that class trumped race every time, and he was insulated from this racism, and that people were willing to accept him because he seemed to be an upper middle class person from a new Commonwealth country, and that mattered more than his colour, that there was obviously some colour prejudice around at the time. And he went to the Durham University, and after that he joined the BBC, and he had an astronomical rise there. He was one of very, very few non-white faces on the BBC in the early 1980s. And he's been on the BBC for as long as I could remember, and he was there virtually his entire career. So, I mean, I know people who knew him personally. I never met him. I saw him once outside Broadcasting House, literally saw him, didn't speak to him. They say that he made a lot of ethnic minority Britons believe that, yes, they could have a major career in mainstream media, not just in the BBC Asian network or whatever, or various channels aimed at various ethnic minority communities. So, he presented the news for many, many years, and he was a man of utter impartiality. Nobody doubted his professional integrity, that he always performed his duties to the highest possible standards, and he was always ethical in everything he did. He had clarity of diction, as well as being able to get to the heart of the matter. He had charisma and ebullience in spades, able to form an instant connection with people from all walks of the life, all over the world, even if he had no common language with them. And he was the author of numerous books. I remember reading one of his books about being in Somalia about 30 years ago, when it was a failed state and there was a terrible famine, and having to communicate with people via an interpreter, but yet somehow feeling he'd made a mysterious connection with this person on a more profound level. He'd suffered coronavirus whilst stricken by cancer as well. So, I mean, I don't think anybody had a bad word to say about him. So he was certainly gifted, and he gave every single day. And people thought that in recent months that he'd actually picked up, but unfortunately not. Turns out that he really was in a death spiral despite appearing to rally. And so he went on almost until the very end. That was him. George Alagaya. You should read The Burning Land, which is a novel of his set in South Africa. And he won numerous awards for various reports he'd done, like on the situation in Iraq. And he was in all sorts of trouble spots all around the world. In Rwanda in the early 1990s, during the Rwandan genocide, he reported from that extensively. Something that the world would rather forget, and many people hang their heads in shame that the international community did nothing, and up to 1 million people were massacred in 100 days. He'd been in South Africa, based in Johannesburg, in the early 90s, when that country was transitioning out of apartheid and into democracy. He'd reported from Afghanistan, from Liberia, from Sierra Leone, the throes of the Sierra Leonean civil war, and things like that. So he'd presented various programs such as The World News Today. He was a main newscaster on the 6 o'clock news, alongside Sophie Raworth from about 2005 to 2007. He was also paired with Natasha Kaplinsky. We don't see her anymore. So he interviewed a number of very prominent figures, including the first black president of South Africa, Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, the Archbishop of Cape Town, Desmond Tutu, and he obviously got to know them during his years in South Africa. What else had he done? He'd interviewed President Mugabe of Zimbabwe, who's no longer with us, and indeed the Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan. So Mr. Ranagai was unusual, being someone of South Asian descent who'd lived for several years in Africa, wasn't actually born there. And of course, in mostly non-white areas of the world, as a BBC journalist, he didn't stand out like a sore thumb, as white journalists sometimes do. He'd gone, reported on the genocide against the Kurds in Iraq and things like that. He been on Newsnight and things like that, which is on about 11 o'clock at night on BBC, a more in-depth program about various stories, often which are not quite headline news, would otherwise be largely overlooked and require some deeper analysis and longer interviews and things like that. So he was happily married for many, many years. He lived in London, and he and his good wife were blessed with a brace of children. So it's colorectal cancer, first of all, but I thought it spread to the liver, but maybe I've got a bit confused. So, and he'd had that for about 9 years. So the cancer spread to various other organs of his. So he got all sorts of awards, like a BAFTA for covering the Kosovo conflict in 1999. And he was the best, he was granted the award of the best international report by the Royal Television Society in 1993. Amnesty International appointed him Journalist of the Year and so on. And he was heaped with honours such as OBE, Order of the British Empire, in 2008. So he'd been at numerous literary festivals presenting his books and things like that. So his books, they've got pace, they're very readable, they'd read well out loud, which is partly his training and sort of writing his scripts for presenting on television, that they're sort of oral literature. And they don't dwell on things for too long. They're quite sparse, yet they're sufficiently emotional and somehow manage to achieve detachment at the same time. So what else was I going to say? So he did very, very much. George Alagaya, well, sorely missed by many. Unfortunately, the BBC is been rocked by some unhappy stories in recent days. But George Alagaya hadn't been presenting for some considerable time. He did go back to Sri Lanka and presented a show from there. Of course, when he was born in 1955, it was still called Ceylon officially. He started off in journalism in Durham University, editing Palatine, which is their university newspaper, because Durham was the county Palatine, as in was semi-independent because it's so far from London for an awfully long time. So that is George Alagaya, from whom we shall hear no more. So I warmly recommend that you peruse some of his tomes. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for watching.